Today's episode is brought to you by QuickBooks Self-Employed. If you work for yourself, save up to 50% for an entire year on the new QuickBooks Self-Employed. It helps separate your business and personal expenses so you can quickly track what you spent for work and what you spent on yourself. QuickBooks Self-Employed helps take the guesswork out of estimated federal quarterly taxes. So come tax time, you know how much money to set aside for Uncle Sam and how much stays in your pocket. Try QuickBooks Self-Employed and save up to 50% at tryselfemployed.com/wolfden. That's tryselfemployed.com/wolfden. Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and future of podcasting and digital media. I'm your host, Midroll Media CEO, Adam Sachs. I'm happy to say that my guest today is Nick Kwa. Nick is the editor of the weekly Hot Pod email newsletter, which covers the podcasting industry. Over the course of just 25 issues, Hot Pod has turned into the industry journal for podcasting, becoming a must-read for just about everyone working in the industry. When he's not writing and publishing Hot Pod, Nick is a writer and reporter, and he has written for Business Insider, Salon, and Paste Magazine. Nick, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
How is the bio? Close?
It's about there. It's always really weird to hear my own body of work kind of be reflected back at me. So I'm still trying to grapple with stuff like that.
And feel free to correct anything that was wrong. Although Paul Rees-Mandel usually gets it pretty right.
No, that's pretty much right.
So I want to talk to you about podcasting and about Hot Pod because I actually think that you really think about the industry maybe more than anybody else out there, despite the fact that you have a day job that isn't closely or directly connected to podcasting.
It's not connected at all.
So what is your day job?
My day job, so I work at BuzzFeed right now. I'm working on their mobile news app team, sort of working with a small team to develop and eventually launch the mobile news app. That's a very new product and it hasn't hit the market yet. So that's going to be in the next couple of weeks. But I write Hot Pod typically on the weekends, and I'm always sort of keeping an eye out on sort of really big news. Like this week has just been a kind of a big week for podcasting, and so I usually tend to that in the evenings. It's a bit of a double life. It's kind of like a superhero situation.
I think that what makes Hot Pod, one of the things that makes Hot Pod great is that you are so clearly a lover of the medium. Your obsession with podcasting like really comes through. What drew you initially to the medium?
So I've been listening to radio for just about my whole life. But the important sort of context here is that I'm not American. I came here for college back in 2008, and I only started sort of getting into NPR, understanding what it is, and sort of developing a relationship with public radio when I was in sophomore year or something like that. But things really turned a corner for me in 2012, 2013, when I was in graduate school in Chicago. There's this thing that a friend of mine who is the one of the producers for Reply All, which is a podcast for Gimlet, PJ Vogt, he once said this thing where a sizable number of podcast listeners are sort of lonely, depressed men. And so that was kind of my situation in 2012, 2013. I wasn't sure what I was doing in my life, but sort of listening to a lot more podcasts, and it ended up becoming a sort of a thing of comfort and sort of therapy for me. And I just started falling in love with the medium and all of its sort of interesting dynamics and communities within the podcasting space from there. So my relationship with podcasting, it's approximately 3.5 years old.
And how much were you listening, or how much would you say you listened in your peak time?
So these days on a day-to-day basis, just about every minute I have to myself. So both commutes to work and back from work, when I'm running, which I run just about every other day, maybe 4 hours a day, 4 or 5 hours a day, even while I'm working, you multiply that by 7 and you get, 25, 26, 27 hours of listening a week.
That's pretty good.
It's all right. I haven't gone deaf yet, which is,
I actually wonder about that. I feel I always think about us being sort of crash test dummy generation in a lot of ways, or guinea pig generation, using our cell phones, drinking diet soda. I wonder if how bad we're going to discover that like having earbuds plugged into your ears, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that like I initially was drawn to the form is because I have really bad eyesight. And I just love consuming all forms of sort of intelligent thought or something like that. And my eyes get really tired reading the internet all day. And, you know, if I listen to podcasts at the rate that I am now, I might go both deaf and blind by the time I'm 40. Like, I don't know. I hope that doesn't happen, but you know, you're right. We're a test generation. We're a test dummy generation. It's unfortunate.
So you obviously, you know, it sounds like podcasts have a really had a profound effect on you at a tough time in your life. Did that lead you to starting Hot Pod?
Not directly, but it led into my sort of really deep emotional relationship to Medium. Like, I take my listening very seriously, and to an extent that I sometimes get a little bit angry when I hear, you know, a half-hearted attempt at a podcast. It's kind of a little bit unhealthy, but the reason why I started Hot Pod was about, you know, a couple of months ago now. I was sort of underutilized at the job I was holding at the time, and I was had a lot of free time, and I was bored. And I was just really, really interested in all these things that were happening. It was coming off the back of the end of Serial, and Alex Blumberg just launched his sort of, you know, show that would eventually become the documentation of Gimlet. Mm-hmm. And it felt like things were moving and nobody was really telling me or trying to put the pieces together as to what was happening. And I figured, you know, why, like I'm, you know, people are emailing me, asking me these questions because they know that I listen to a lot of podcasts. And so I just put two and two together and like, why don't I just put together a newsletter? Wouldn't that be fun? And that's literally how it started.
How much did you know about, obviously you knew a lot about the content side of it, but how much did you know about the podcasting, this industry and business side when you started it?
For radio and podcast industries specifically, I had no real sort of background in it, but I am generally interested in sort of the development of industries, the media industry in general, the movement of sort of creative markets and creative industries. It's something, I mean, I am sort of an economic sociologist by training back in graduate school. And it's, I'm not saying that educational experience directly translated to how I write Hot Pod to think about the industry, but it's always been an interest of mine. And so it's applying certain like frames of thinking and just being experimentative and innovative with the way I'm sort of approaching the industry to sort of figure out what's happening or sort of, you know, emotionally check myself on what's going on.
It seemed like almost overnight it became essential reading for the industry. Was that like in your plan when you wrote your first one?
I barely have any plan. The answer there is no. I barely have an idea of what I'm going to do like 2 hours from now. And I like try not to think that way. It was completely by surprise. All I did was drop the link to my tiny letter in a radio listserv that exists here in New York. It's just for, it's a listserv that a bunch of people in the radio community in the city are a part of. I dropped it in there, and next thing I know, the thing kept growing, and I kept getting sort of sources reaching out to me. It kind of gave me the sense that the radio community doesn't really have a place where it feels represented or where it feels covered appropriately.
Do you think, when you say radio community, I mean, I don't think of us as being part of my company being part of the radio community, even though I guess we're adjacent to it. Like, do you think of the radio community and the podcasting community to be one?
I don't think they're one. I think that your sensibility is right, that the community that Midroll and the two networks that you have cultivated over time is very, very different from the public radio/radio community. But if we're, you know, if I'm thinking along the lines of the formalization of an industry, all adjacent things are part of the same fabric. And so I am physically located in a place that's, you know, centered around public radio. Mm-hmm. But I am like, I'm very cognizant of that relationship between the two different communities that you have there. And my interest spans both coasts, like from coast to coast in this moment of time. Like, I'm very much interested in what you're doing with the Blacklist as much as I'm interested with what happens next in Invisibilia.
Sure.
Yeah.
And do you think that like pure radio people are reading Hot Pod too?
Yeah, I think it's a fair equal mix of public radio people, people who are sort of independent podcasters, and folks who are of what I like to call sort of the West Coast, which is not a, perhaps not a fair, you know, characterization of your community, but like in my head, it's like, it's very much centered on Hollywood and on the community, on the comedy scenes and on people who are involved in mediums that are not just, audio. So I think I believe it's an equal split. There's no real way for me to figure that out because I don't collect any data beyond email addresses on my newsletter.
So beyond like dropping your tiny letter link into that radio listserv, have you done anything to promote the newsletter?
No, almost none whatsoever. I initially started tweeting out just a link, but at the time I was working at another publication and somebody spotted it and it's like, yeah, you shouldn't like tweet that out, which later I would find that policy wasn't actually in place. They're just being extremely conservative. So like, this has been purely word of mouth. And honestly, like I'm a bit too occupied with like other parts of my day to think about marketing my own newsletter. So it's been very much word of mouth and organic, I think.
And so my guess is a lot of people who listen to the show probably read or have maybe read Hot Pod. If you haven't, I recommend it. I eagerly read it every weekend when it hits my inbox. Some used to be Saturday mornings. Now it's like Saturday night or Sunday.
At some point during the weekend.
I think what's interesting, one thing that's interesting about it is that it has elements of being journalism, but it also feels very personal too. Like it's almost part journalism, part diary. And it's also editorial because like it's very clear what you like and don't like. How do you describe it? Do you think of it as journalism?
You know, that is such a good question because it's something that I've been grappling with the newsletter ever since it started. When I first launched the Hot Pod, the way I thought about it, it's like, let's be as professional as possible. Let's try to be comprehensive in my coverage. Let's also be fair about the kinds of shows that I'm covering. And after a while, I kind of realized for a side project and for the amount of time I'm putting into it, it's almost impossible for me to be able to be comprehensive either from a coverage standpoint or from a sort of positionality standpoint. I can't quite be fair to everybody because I can't quite cover everybody. So over time, it's evolved into become something more closer to a column than an actual journalistic newsletter. I kind of think it's half and half. Like I do think the first half of it, or the manner in which I choose news items and the way I choose to cover it and the way I choose to be fair to all parties involved, I still hold myself to some beliefs in objectivity and beliefs in sort of counter-arguments and arguments. But sometimes if I don't like a show, I just won't cover it because life is too short and I'm not dedicating a lot of my time to this thing. Like I would love to dedicate a lot more, but given the time that I put into it, I only want to concern myself with the things that I'm truly interested in. And that requires me to be a bit more, as you mentioned, personal and non-journalistic.
And so if you don't like something, you're not going to cover it because life's too short and you don't want to make enemies, or life's too short for you to even be thinking and writing about it?
It's more the latter. Like I'm not the kind of person that rabble rouses, but at the same time, if something deeply, deeply offends me and I think it's an impediment to the development of whatever, I will call it out. It just so happens that like nothing has come across my desk to kind of go like,
I was gonna say, I don't remember reading any of your like anything that's disgusted you.
Well, I mean, there's something that happened this week that kind of is making me consider my stance on that. This whole, I'm not so sure if you noticed, like I'm sure you'd have like, so Ira Glass at some point last week said that, you know, public radio is ready for capitalism. Mm-hmm. A public radio producer up in Boston wrote an article for The All kind of going, well, what does that mean for public radio and the relationship with its audience? And for some reason, there's a quality of almost over-sincereness and I don't know, I don't want to like slander this person or this position on a recorded podcast, but like it struck against my sensibilities. So heartily and so harshly that I think I'm gonna finally kind of, I don't know, take a stand on something for once in my life.
Wow. All right. I look forward to it. And I think about whether you're journalism or not when I think about it, because like, you know, in a recent example, I think maybe a few weeks ago, you teased that you had information about Gimlet's upcoming third show. This is before they announced it. And then in the following week's issue, you sort of pulled back and you said that, you know, the people at Gimlet asked you to hold off. So how do you think about that? Like, do you, when you think about the fact that you sometimes get access to insider information, do you feel a responsibility to be, to have that kind of like journalistic integrity?
So that's, that was like a really interesting situation and something that I'm like still grappling with today.
Do you want to talk about it for the people?
I'd love to like sort of parse this out because I haven't been able to like talk about this with anybody because I don't typically talk about podcasts with people in real life.
Why don't you describe what happened first of all?
So what happened was Gimlet. So they had this new show coming out. It's called The Mystery Show. It's by Sarli Kine, who is I would argue very much a superstar within the public radio world. And they've been trying to keep it hush hush. You know, it's a very sort of a top secret show on their end. And at some point there was somebody on the digital side of WNYC accidentally sort of put the page up of the show very much prematurely. The show page on WNYC for the Gimlet show was put up a couple of weeks in advance before they intend to drop the teaser or sort of announce that this was happening.
This story is news to me.
This is all way well after the fact and the surprise has been contained and delivered. So like, I feel comfortable talking about this, but it's a situation where I spotted it, about two or three people sent me, you know, screenshots of the page. I immediately like went to Gimlet and so for a sort of comment, and they kind of like, yeah, we'll get back to you. You know, please like hold your horses, whatever. Mm-hmm. And after a while, it's a situation in which you're like, you know, could you hold off reporting on this? And I said, well, like, you know, talk to me and tell me about the show. Like, give me something that I can work with here. And it was a situation where they wanted to preserve that mystery, and it was. The choice ended was very much up to me whether I wanted to float it or not. So that kind of forced me to think about what exactly do I want or am I supposed to be doing in this newsletter? Am I trying to sort of deliver scoops or you know punch up or whatever? Or am I supposed to be, or is this newsletter a function of the development of the industry? And so I kind of came down on the side of like, well, if I sort of float this news out, you know, prematurely or like before Gimlet wants it to be out there, I am A, undermining Gimlet's capacity to like operate their own marketing strategy. I am sort of putting somebody's job in WNYC, you know, in trouble. Like, and also I'm taking away that element of mystery and surprise that some people would feel if they did, you know, see the show marketed as how Gimlet wanted it to be. Sure. And so I kind of weighed back and forth, like, and that, and I ended up making the choice to like hold back because I wanted to like preserve that sense of mystery. And I kind of think that, you know, Gimlet's way too young to be sort of, to be sort of turned over that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have any sort of right to be authoritative on that decision. It's just how I felt was the right thing to do at the time. And I'm still wondering if it's the right thing to do.
Do you think that there's a model out there for you when you think about what Hot Pod is and how you think about Hot Pod? Do you have some, another writer that you look to or another newsletter that you look to and say, like, this is my inspiration? Because it sounds like you're still figuring it out in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I like to think everybody in the media industry is figuring it out.
But sure.
I'm not saying that I'm part of the media industry. I actually don't have any reference points. I write it from start to finish in one sitting. It's very much stream of consciousness. That's actually a really interesting way for me. Like, I have no idea. I don't know where this thing is going. I'm doing it because it's interesting. It makes me feel good. And I'm being helpful somewhat to everybody in the space. I hope, or I think so.
Yeah, no, I think you are. I think it's really become very valuable reading. I'm curious, is there a world in which you think this could become your full-time gig?
I think that is contingent on a couple of more developments. Like, there has to be a lot more general readership interest in podcasting as a form, but not just as a form to be consumed, but a form to be thought about critically or to be cared about from a business perspective. My dream, like, I would happily retire Hot Pod. Like, my hope is that Hot Pod is rendered irrelevant when there is a grant land for a podcast, for example, when there's enough really, really smart, talented people writing really interesting things about shows that are born natively to the medium, mm-hmm. or if there's a Gossip Mill or a Hollywood Reporter or Variety that functions just for the podcast, not radio, but the podcast industry. Whenever the industry as a whole reaches a scale and a sort of cultural place where those two things can exist, then yeah, you know, I would love to like jump in and like try to establish Hotpot for something, something to that extent.
We're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to start picking your brain about the state of podcasting.
Sounds good.
Be right back. Thanks to today's sponsor, QuickBooks Self-Employed. If you work for yourself, save up to 50% on an entire year of QuickBooks Self-Employed. It helps separate your business and personal expenses so you can quickly track what you spent for work and what you spent on yourself. For instance, those groceries you bought for your next catering gig won't get mixed up with the food you bought for the cookout with friends this weekend. QuickBooks Self-Employed also helps take the guesswork out of your estimated quarterly and year-end taxes. So come tax time, you know how much money to set aside for Uncle Sam and how much stays in your pocket. QuickBooks provides you the tools to help you maximize deductions like home office and mileage, so you keep more of your hard-earned money. Find out what QuickBooks Self-Employed can do for you and save up to 50% at tryselfemployed.com/wolfden. That's tryselfemployed.com/wolfden. Okay, we're back with Nick Kwa, the writer of Hot Pod. And I want to transition the conversation a bit to pick your brain as the podcast expert, because like I said at the beginning, I really do think that you think about podcasting perhaps more than anybody else, despite the fact that you have a day job that's not in podcasting. And I want to know, first of all, how has the world of podcasting changed since you started Hot Pod?
How the world of podcasting changed internally?
We can start actually what changes do you think have been the most significant?
I think the most significant thing is just the amount of attention that's being paid to medium. And I think that means a lot in ways that we can't quite see from a outsider perspective. And I'm sure you see this a lot more. The quote-unquote serial effect that happened in the fall with the success of WBEZ's spinoff and a combination between that and sort of Alex Bloomberg's making the round in the venture capital circles, I think a lot more people with money are interested in talking to people who are working in audio. And I have a lot of friends who do work within the space in digital audio more broadly. Mm-hmm. And it feels like every day now I'm hearing that they're getting more responses to their phone calls or their emails. These are, I think, quiet developments.
More responses. When you say more responses, do you mean from the money people or from talent or both?
From many people, from talent, from possible partnerships, from possible, advertisers. Mm-hmm. People are, I think, when I, people broadly, like people within this larger sort of media economy industry thing, they are becoming aware of this thing that they don't quite understand. And I think what we're in the middle of right now is a situation of education in both directions. It's radio and podcasting people being educated on how these things could work and scale up in terms of building revenues and developing shows on a massive scale. But it's also an education for the other side to figure out how to market on this thing, how to advertise on this thing, and how to distribute on this thing.
Oh yeah, I mean we've added more than 100 new advertisers already year to date.
Right, and it's purely because there's been this landslide of attention. My personal question, is the industry ready to scale up at that speed or to like meet that demand? And I am still going back and forth whether that's the case. Jody Evergan, who's sort of the head of podcasting in 538, he phrases really interestingly once in a question, which is like, are we in a bubble? And I don't think we're in a podcasting bubble, but I do think we're in a podcasting attention bubble. Mm. There's some extent there's going to have to be a management of expectation both ways, I think.
So you don't, instead of seeing it sort of as an ever increasing amount of attention and kind of growth, you think that we should be on the lookout for sort of podcasting's moment in the general public's conversation and discourse to potentially start waning?
Yeah, I think we're beginning to see a little bit of that. I think these things, I have a sense, and I really have only been on this earth for 25 years. So I haven't quite been able to see these.
You're only 25?
I'm only 25.
Oh, I'm a interview child. Over.
So like, I think we're planting the seeds. By we, I mean like the podcasting industry. The seeds are being planted for a long-term growth, for business to be put in place, for new business models to get their first try and an experiment to see whether this thing can work. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that pays off in whatever timeline or whatever cycle it takes for these things to pay off. But I'm not pessimistic about the fact that there is a bubble. I think in if anything, it's actually a good thing that attention will wane.
And so back to the kind of like events, are there any that stick out to you that are like, oh, these were these, obviously there was Serial. You mentioned Gimlet. Mm. Are there other kind of events that you think have been significant since you started writing the newsletter a few months ago?
So last year, I mean, there was the network that you guys launched, Wolfpop, which, you know, it's a signal to me, like, you guys were able to develop a good enough revenue or model from Earwolf itself that you established a second network. So that to me is a signal that something's really interesting is happening.
I asked you that question hoping that Wolfpop was going to be your first answer. Oh, so thank you.
Of course,
very much.
Of course. You know, you got to play to the home crowd, right? the fact that Radiotopia is increasing in audience tension and increasing in the sort of space in the culture, it seems to be a very, very successful, but very quietly successful podcast network, in my mm-hmm. opinion. And another thing that sort of is really interesting is watching all the really large executive talents move out of public radio into private podcasting. Chris Bannon, who went over to Midroll, mm-hmm. You know, Alex Bloomberg already left and created Gimlet. And this morning, I just heard that like Eric Nuzum, VP of programming at NPR, is now going to like be SVP of original content in Audible, mm-hmm. which suggests that, you know, Audible is now getting its real skin in the game, and we're a couple of months away from seeing whatever the major play is there.
Yep.
These are all like not watershed moments, because watershed moments need mass understanding of what that moment is, but these are small incremental things that I think accumulate and aggregate into something that's really remarkable.
Do you think we're going to look back a couple of years from now and go, oh, that time period was the transition moment?
I don't know. In any long view of history, the significance of each moment is remarkably small. I think it's also, I kind of feel like it's the nature of the podcast industry to be a slow but steady growth industry in the first place. Like, up until this point, the growth of podcasting has been very, very steady. It hasn't been explosive, but has been extremely reliable and steady. And now we're in a moment where we could see explosive growth, and I don't know. That's ask me in 5 years, I guess. I'm trying to work my way through this as I'm talking out loud.
So what's happening right now that gets you excited?
What's happening right now is seeing a lot more of my sort of friends who are producers and who are like audio talents getting jobs, which really value their skill set. That's really, really exciting to me. But of course, what's also super exciting is all the really interesting content that's coming out. Gizmodo just pushed their own podcast out. It's really fascinating. Panoply is doing this really interesting play with publishers that aren't native to audio, but sort of giving them not a turnkey solution, but a manner in which, or a model in which, to utilize their digital media assets into something that can be good for the podcasting space. And I think that's really fascinating. I love personally conversational podcasts, maybe a little bit more than narrative nonfiction podcasts or quote unquote storytelling podcasts, mm-hmm. which I think is a kind of a treasonous statement in a lot of ways, because a lot of people, you know, have been selling the whole intimacy storytelling angle for podcasting for a while. Mm-hmm. But I just love the fact that a lot more really intelligent people getting their literal voices on air and me being able to be on the other side and consuming it. So the fact that there's some more quality stuff is what I'm really, really excited about.
What's the conversational stuff that you like?
So every single GabFest that Slate puts out, mm-hmm. I'm just a huge fan of it. And I'm on your networks, The Canon is by far one of my favorite film podcasts, mm-hmm. film related podcasts.
Yeah, those guys are
like,
great.
I just really like that sort of conflict prone and, you know, dialectic operational sort of conversation, and they're both like such specific critics.
Yes.
And to see more of that would be really, really interesting. I think Grantland has the best, you know, bench of cultural thinkers, mm-hmm. who translate really well into audio. Wesley Morris is there, Alex Papadimos is there, the people who do Watch of Thrones and Hollywood's Perspectives are there, Chris Ryan and I'm blanking on the other person's name, but
Andy Greenwald.
Andy Greenwald, thank you so much. He was recently on the Long Form podcast, and he's like, I can't believe I blanked on his name. And I don't know what the hell is going to happen without Bill Simmons. Are you guys taking him? Because he's probably going to launch his own thing. If he does, that'd be really interesting.
I don't know. I hope he joins us. don't hold your breath.
Letters? Like,
I don't know.
Like, dude's floating around. That guy, he's not a quiet person, so like he's going to end up somewhere or doing his own thing. So, and whenever that happens, you know, praise hands emoji. I'm really going to be really excited.
All right. What do you think are the biggest threats? Like, what's going to challenge the podcasting industry?
What's going to challenge the podcast industry? I've been thinking about this. I've been trying to think about it from both a structural and sort of actor by actor level. I think structurally, the whole conversation about self-driving cars, I think that's less of an issue, but more like the fact that every other new media sort of industry has stepped up their game. It's really a war for every single bit of your attention span right now. Mm-hmm. I listen to podcasts both in my in-between, my quote-unquote in-between times, like my commutes and my sort of runs, but I also listen to it as an active activity. Like I'm sitting down, I have earphones in, and I'm sitting and I'm listening. That sort of the shifts in dynamics there, and whenever mobile video really picks up and ends up being a lot more efficient in terms of data distribution, I think that could be something that's a legitimate threat, but I don't know yet. Other than that, I think I don't know. That's something that I ask every day, but I feel like I don't know enough about advertising dynamics to actually speak about the way advertisers currently relate to podcasting. But I think that could be a possible risk factor.
In your ideal world, where does podcasting go from here?
So in an ideal world, there's a bunch of analogies that I use to think about the space. But my favorite analogy and the one that I'm personally invested in is the analogy with, you know, premium and broadcast television. Mm-hmm. When I kind of see my ideal trajectory for the industry, it's not a growth into a network of highly sophisticated developed blogs. It's a world in which you could speak about Earwolf or Gimlet the same way you can speak about AMC mm-hmm. and like ABC, NBC, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If we can get to that place and have more cottage industries about people thinking and talking about podcasting around it, that would be sort of my ideal place.
Do you think it's likely to happen?
Not anytime soon. Probably 5-10 years if this thing pays off. But who knows? Who knows? That's your job.
That is my job. Yeah, pressure's on. Curious, if someone wanted to start a podcast now, what would be your advice for him or her?
My advice would be, and like, I mean, first of all, I'm in no position to give any advice because I don't make podcasts, nor am I interested in ever making a podcast at this point of time. Who knows, that might change. But it's to really know what makes you as a presenter compelling. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just about what the podcast is about. It is very much a performative medium, and you have to be somebody who's compelling to hear. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the disconnect when I hear stuff about like, and no, I don't mean to throw any shade on like Goldman Sachs, but like I heard, you know, Goldman Sachs is going to be like putting up a podcast. You know,
I did not hear that.
Well, it's happening. Apparently it's happening. Mm-hmm. Andreessen Horowitz has a podcast out. Yep. I think that's the stuff that he talked about is really, really interesting. They're really interesting thinkers. It's just not compelling listening. Like it's really hard sometimes to listen to a person who's very, very smart, but isn't able to be interesting mm-hmm. in the moment because it's a lot of an ask to invade my ear space. Practice makes perfect. I think that's one thing. Yeah. And also know how to market, know who to align yourself with. Try to get the attention of a network. If you're going to go fully independent, like be really aggressive and be very professional in the way you're thinking about audience development. Take yourself seriously. I think that's sort of my number one like piece of advice.
Okay, my last question for you. If you were going to make if someone gave you money to make an investment, is there a specific company that you would invest in, or B, if you want to be more diplomatic, but you don't have to be, is there a specific area that you would invest in? Like, would you say, I want to make an investment in content or technology? Where do you think the big opportunities are?
Oh my, that's really hard. This is the Sophie's choice of questions. Okay, I'll give you two versions of this answer. The answer I give, if I'm thinking purely about the development of the space, like what investment can I make that would benefit the entire industry in the sort of medium to long run, it would have to be a technology play. Hosting is still very much, I think, inefficient. There's no real consolidation of infrastructure, and I think that necessarily inhibits the consolidation of a culture. I do think that structure informs the creation of culture at the end of the day. So it would be a technology play to make hosting more efficient, to make distribution more efficient, to make analytics more efficient. I think, you know, if I really had $1 million, it would be to develop help develop better metrics and a better sort of analytics play. But if it's $1 million for me to play with, and like this is an ideal world where I don't have to worry about the bills,
yeah,
more content. Just I would pick out the five people that I think are doing amazing things, and just sort of work with them and give them the space to like create amazing things. So those are my two versions.
All right, that's awesome. Answer. Well, you should go raise $1 million and build that first solution that you're talking about, because we would be customers.
Shit, I have bills to pay. I got student debt. Like, I gotta worry about stuff. You know, I'll deal with that later.
All right. Well, Nick, I really appreciate your time. This was great. Where can people? First of all, I guess they should subscribe to Hot Pod, right? Where can they find that?
Yes, please subscribe. It's tinyletter.com/hotpod, HOTPOD. Mm-hmm. Tiny Letter, like every podcast you've ever heard, probably has advertised Tiny Letter. So you can sign up there.
And if they want to find you on Twitter, NWQua, right? Q-U-A-H.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And listeners, thank you so much for listening. As always, please remember to subscribe to the show, rate and review in iTunes. And until next time, happy podcasting. One more time, I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Intuit QuickBooks. If you work for yourself, save up to 50% for an entire year on the new QuickBooks Self-Employed. It helps separate your business and personal expenses and helps take the guesswork out of estimated federal quarterly taxes. So come tax time, you know how much money to set aside for Uncle Sam and how much stays in your pocket. Try QuickBooks Self-Employed and save up to 50% at tryselfemployed.com/wolfden. One more time, that's tryselfemployed.com/wolfden.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Risa Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.